同佢哋仔阿 Ken 分手啊？
Hello and welcome to Podcast on Fire. I'm your host, Stuart Sutherland. Joining me this evening, we've got Ken.
Hello.
Right, so tonight we are looking at Edmund Pang's Love in a Puff, various site updates, and we are tackling an Ekin Cheng related question. And our third wheel, Mike Banner, has arrived safely. And he's doing the usual touristy things when you're in Korea, like going to the Nata Theatre, or going along to the Myeongdong Night Market, bumping shoulders with Choi Hark, the Seahawks Mall, oh, of course, visiting the Seoul Tower, you know, the usual. So, interact with our show via email, which is podcastonfire@googlemail.com. We are Oastly socially networked, so find us on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire, and of course, Facebook. Send us your questions, comments, and suggestions. I'd also like to give out a special thanks to people who have been emailing us. Special thanks to Matthew, Amber, and David. So if you want to be another lucky person that emails into us, just fire one out to podcastonfire@googlemail.com. So, site updates. We're just looking towards, obviously, organising more specials for the show. We've got things like the Jackie Chan specials. I'm currently attacking all available forums with polls deciding which Jackie Chan film we should be reviewing in our 80s special. So, as you could expect, Police Story has got the strong lead at the moment. If you do want to vote for your favourite Jackie Chan movie of the 80s, hop on to podcastonfire.com/forum and you will find the poll for that in the poll section. I think the voting is only available for the next fortnight, so you better be quick.
We should state that there is a but to that poll, because I am covering along with a guest Jackie's career up until 1982. So moves in the poll are from after Dragon Lord and onwards, basically, when he stopped doing period martial arts comedy and started doing things like Project A. So we're going to state that it's from 82 to 89, essentially.
Mm-hmm. It just makes my life easier to say the 80s.
Yeah.
So
it makes me seem awfully important to state well. It's like this, Scholar Ken proclaims.
And I am in my usual mood of I can't be bothered doing anything with the website. I think this actually covers a lot of the stuff I'd done with Hong Kong Cinema UK, my old review site in the past. I generally do get a little bit of fatigue and just choose to do nothing with it and mope about on social networks.
And for fuck's sake, it looks good. I think the site looks good. It's just annoying that WordPress doesn't allow for a cool logo in the left corner. But otherwise, it looks good. You did a mighty cool cleanup a few months ago, with the various categories. So, you know, don't mope. Be happy and be happy. It's snowy outside.
I'm needing maybe an extra sugar in my tea or my juice. Yeah. Anyway, Ken, you got any updates?
Yeah, the very special one, it's already happened, but SoGoodReviews.com is finally back. On February the 14th, the first new update went up, although the site as it looks now was available for a few days. It just made my life easier when tweaking a lot of the things that no one notices. After I got the site back, I found out there was some stuff that I missed. So did that over the weekend, and on Sunday, February the 14th, I think it was that date, it went up again with the review of Amazing Stories, which has three stories, and Joyce Nye is in all three of them. And the quick takes featured two movies with Pauline Chan, and the other two quick takes were two old-timey Wu Chan movies, so kind of a theme that I didn't expect. if you can call it that. But I'm very pleased about the way it looks, and I thank everybody for the kind words that you gave me on YouTube and on Facebook, on the So Good Reviews fan page on Facebook, no less. Yeah, I've got fans now. I'm gonna show the world I have fans, and I'm gonna believe everyone is a die-hard fan. Everyone I've spammed. Please join me. Please join me. Please join me. Please join me. But I'm very proud. And on a serious note, I was very pleased with the content before on the old look, the version 2.0. This is 3.0. But I realized it was rather flat. It needed this bit polish, if you will. And so now, before it was fun to update the site, now I love it. I love putting stuff in these new templates. I'm very, very happy that we found a look that corresponds with kind of who I am, partly. This exploitation, sleazy movies, movie viewer, if you will, but also of everything else. But as I've spoken before, said before, how do you choose a theme based on, you know, who you are? What do you want the site to reflect? And I want it to reflect that this site is a bit dark, going to the dark depths of Hong Kong cinema, and to expect the unexpected every week is what you should do. And it's now very much a more sticky experience. That's my cap to it all. It's a very, very much naughtier and more sticky experience, SoGoodReviews.com. So I'm very happy about that. So, and also, I have to give a shout out to the person who helped me. Persons. First of all, the web designer, Ari Handler, whose own site will be linked to in this show post. He did a marvelous job with the layout. And also Brian Kirby helped me out off shelflifeclothing.com, off briankirby.net, and off Hong Kong Subtitles, the famous site, Twitter account, and Facebook group, Hong Kong Subtitles. That's Brian Kirby.
And it's also getting its own column in Jade Screen magazine.
Based in around Hong Kong Subtitles, the he helped me out with the center background, which if you look at it closely, there's some very cool stuff in there, but it's not meant to intrude. And he also did the animated header with the header with the film strip and the Warn film and stuff like that. So I'm very, very happy with their work, and you did an excellent job, guys. Thank you so much.
All right. Now that we've covered that, last movies watched.
Yeah. I've started.
Keep talking.
Yeah, exactly. First, like, quick take review on the new site, in the new template, if you will, that I put up. You know, again, I love putting stuff up in this new template. It's when things are new, you kind of get excited, at least initially. So I reviewed, rewatched, but I've never written a review of this either. My Neighbors Are Phantoms. And this 1990 production was produced by the Wong family. This particular Wong family is Wong Tin Lam and his son, Wong Jing. Wong Tin Lam, famous director, but fans of Johnny To movies, Election, both Election movies and The Mission. Wong Tin Lam, this very heavyset older gentleman, he's turned into quite a cool character actor. Even was nominated, I believe, for his supporting role in Election. And Wong Jing, we all know, and love and hate. And love, hate. He didn't direct this movie. It was directed by Lau Shut Yu, who directed Ghost Fever for Wong Jing, kind of a fun, undemanding horror comedy or ghost comedy. And also, I believe this was a Shaw Brothers movie I haven't seen called New Tales of the Flying Fox, which sounds very colorful. Mm-hmm. My Neighbors Are Phantoms is a 1990 movie. Nat Chan stars as one of a gang of cops who are going after some robbers, and therefore we get a early 90s violent gunplay sequence early on in the film. Some humor connected to that. This leads into one of the robbers. He sees a photograph, and there's some people in this photograph like wanting him to come in, come here, come here. And he's possessed by the spirits in the photograph. And he eventually, I believe, dies. I've forgotten already because, as I will tell you, there's a lot of elements in this film that are quite wonderful, so you forget early elements as well. But he eventually dies, and instead, the next person possessed is Charlie Cho. And what do we know about Charlie Cho, Stu? What's the usual role of Charlie Cho in movies? Can you say that?
He's a little bit of a pervy git.
Little bit.
Well, I think he's obviously will be more notable for his roles in the Police Story movies, where he is toned down a little compared to some of his other movies.
He's a slimy lawyer, not a perverted lawyer, or perverted in any way. But you know what? The cameo in this film, this is the Charlie Cho, the pervert, the technically savvy peeper. He has quite a lot of equipment at his disposal, not just camera setups, but during this 5-minute cameo, this just cements why Charlie Cho is who he is. And he clearly enjoys what he's doing in movies. For better or worse, but I love Charlie. I don't know, it's shameless. But eventually, he is the one that actually is lured into the photograph, and out comes these trapped spirits who need to suck blood from a number of persons to give to Satan, and eventually, therefore, unleash hell on earth. But there's a kind one amongst these spirits, played by Sha La Chung, Chung Man, who is ordered to possess or entice Nat Chan's character. She does this unwillingly, but they strike up a relationship, and yada, yada, yada. It leads to a dopey group of policemen, a semi-competent Taoist priest played by Chung Fa from Encounters of the Spooky Kind. Mm-hmm. I say semi-competent because he's passed out drunk for large parts of the movie and goes insane at one point, but it's, you know, he's still the Taoist priest of the movie. And they battle back against the spirits. And what I like this film is, for once, Wong Jing humor, which is very low, because starting with one of the cast members outside of Ching Miao is Amy Yip. And guess what kind of jokes they structure around Amy Yip's presence in the movie. Guess, take a guess. And the first count, first time you guess, that doesn't count. Because it's so obvious. So guess what kind of jokes.
Go on, it's got to be to do with two things.
Yeah. The big things.
Yes.
Yep.
It's got to be some bad tit jokes.
Yep. Cleavage. They call her Biggie as well, obviously. but it's all fun. It's also sometimes very clever. Various jokes in the movie. That isn't one of them. But it's one of those, like, God, I love Hong Kong cinema. but it also has a combination of the low humor with some very gruesome scenarios, actually quite gory. These spirits can, you know, possess humans in the way that they, you know, they invite them to their house. These spirits invite the various cops and friends of the cops to their house and give them food and snacks, and they're chowing down on chicken, but in actual fact they're chowing down on limbs and pulsating brains and stuff like that, and it's kind of graphic. Mm-hmm. And in actual fact gruesome, not just cheesy gruesome, but kind of disgusting, and I like this combination. It doesn't go all out gruesome and gory all throughout the film, but you know, it has, you know, that Hong Kong cinema energy, that kind of Mr. Vampire type energy with lots of creative spells and animated special effects and just energy, you know, snappy energy, and even some unexpected scenarios with among other things, if people remember the Eastern Heroes video magazine, I think the first one, there's an interview with Wong Jing where he talks about Nat Chan, his relationship with him, and they show a clip with Nat Chan in the Game of Death tracksuit fighting against a spirit of some sort, and it's actually from this movie. I won't reveal the circumstances behind it because it's far too complicated, but it's Nat Chan in the Bruce Lee tracksuit, the Game of Death tracksuit, and to cap it all off, My Neighbors Are Phantoms is the rare product out of the massive production house that Hong Kong cinema was that could claim it fired on all cylinders expertly. Because that's not a common thing that they featured a lot of things, and those a lot of things were rather good. Usually it's very uneven, you know. Especially when you have the Charlie Show as the pervert, and pervert jokes, and Amy Yip's big breasts jokes. So it's very good fun. Not a movie that I think is readily available now. It was probably on VHS, on Laserdisc and VCD, and no DVD as such. But it's a shame. It's one of those underrated ones.
Mm-hmm. All right. For me, I've not been watching much recently. Just been it's just been busy. But one of the movies I have been trying to conquer has been Love Exposure, the epic Japanese movie with the running time of nearly 4 hours.
One of Adam Terrell's acquired movies for the UK market, yeah?
Yep, through the Third Window Films brand.
Yep.
Label, aye. So, for people not familiar, the plot is, I'm just going to take this right off the press release, following the untimely death of his mother during his early childhood, Tokyo teenager Yu is raised by his father, Tetsuo, who has dealt with his grief by becoming a Catholic priest. Despite his new calling, Tetsuo is seduced into a love affair with an emotionally unstable parishioner, an act that causes him to transfer guilt onto Yu, whom he forces to attend confession as often as possible. Eager to start satisfying his father's demands, but quickly running out of false transgressions. Man, I should have just written this myself. Basically, his dads want him to confess his sins each day. So basically, Yu's a good kid. He's like helping elderly people across the road. He won't stand on bugs. So basically, he's needing to become rebellious. He needs to sin. So he basically jumps the deep end of the pool. He joins a gang. The gang start knocking over vending machines. And then they try to figure out the ultimate sin. And they basically meet this group of they're just old pervs who teach them this almost martial art of panty peeking. And it is the art of taking photos up lassie's skirts. And
speaking of, you know, technically savvy peeping, you know, that I mentioned with Charlie Show.
Exactly. And the training sequences almost combine like wushu martial arts, like the big spin kicks to the drop split landing, but when that split landing there's a hand reached under a skirt with a digital camera. And they also have like their three section staff with cameras taped on the end of them.
No.
So they start spinning around and throw them onto the floor. Then you.
Wow. And it seems like quite a busy movie, and because it's on a very serious and very grave sinning and priests and Catholics, but then, you know, they have time to do this to be a Hong Kong movie.
Mm-hmm. And there is some sort of a forgotten subplot of the main character Yu has never found his Maria. He's never found his woman. And he knows that for a fact is because he's never had an erection. So,
of course, as you do, find out.
And this is kind of considered a miracle. The movie starts off like a Quentin Tarantino movie where it has a black screen and it sort of like comes up a chapter. But this comes up 165 days until the miracle. And of course, the miracle is him getting a fucking boner in the middle of the street. And this introduces the female lead of the movie, who is like a schoolgirl, but she's passionate about being a Christian.
Huh.
So it gets complicated.
By the way, can I ask you? Does it take like 2 hours before the panty photographing angle is revealed, or is it?
No, that's like in the first half hour.
All right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. It goes for a quick pace, funnily enough, but the movie does centre around three characters. So like the first hour is basically Yu's story. Then for like the next hour is split across the two female leads. And of course then it all comes together when the three of them meet. And then that's their story from there. So it's almost like a few short films all spliced together.
And they eventually intersect or the characters, I guess. Okay, yeah, cool.
And there is also a fun reference to the Scorpion movies, the Prisoner.
Yeah, female prisoner movies. Yeah.
Aye. The lead character lost in a game. It's like a game of cards, but it's actually a game. And instead of cards, they've got photos of skirt, like the photos they've taken up Lassie's skirts. And they're basically saying, right, I've got a better one than you, and they're putting them down, and the main guy loses, so his forfeit is to cross-dress, so he dresses as Lady Scorpion, and he saves the leading lassie like in a fight, and she basically falls for Lady Scorpion, not knowing that it's him, and she detests him. So
classic. Mm-hmm. Classic bit of conflict.
Aye. We could have easily saved 2 hours of this film if he actually had enough balls to admit it to begin with, but he doesn't.
but then again, this movie is so universally hailed that they seem to successfully argue that 4 hours is what we need. And I believe Adam said that he knew of the director and his prior work. He thought it was really shit, and now that he's made a 4-hour movie shot on video, it's like, oh boy. But then again, he was so surprised, and everyone seems to have been like totally surprised. Not surprised, but they really, really dug the film.
Yeah. And I have gotten through... I haven't actually finished the movie yet, but it's taken me 3 sittings so far. Oh no, 2. I'll have it completed by 3 sittings. I'd basically start off watching the first 45 minutes, and then I ended up watching, say, the next 2 hours, the second sitting. And now I've got like the last 50 minutes left. So, and the movie is winning me over.
Right.
Because I thought the plot and then the tough girl, like a lot of the things I found annoying. But the performance done by the leading girl, Sakura Ando, who is known for... Wait, I think I've just mentioned the wrong lassie. Aye, there is a second girl who is a con artist, a coke dealer, and the regional leader of a bizarre religious cult. But yeah.
Does it seem like a movie that will take time or has taken time to be very serious and very heartfelt, or it's just...
Yep, it really is just at the third, definitely during the third hour, when the leading girl, who is Yoko, which is Hikari Mitsushima, okay, spelt and saying it wrong, but she really does have this great heartfelt scene where she's basically just, man, I done the foolish thing and sat up to watch it at the latest hour, and she was doing a great performance, but I cannot remember a thing she spoke about.
it's an overwhelming movie, perhaps. Yeah.
But like her performance is of clearly the best amongst the people in the movie. So like, I just recommend it to those who already have a hard on for Japanese cinema. I'll conclude this with the next show, because I think after recording tonight is when I'm going to finish the movie.
Right.
But yeah,
you probably talked yourself into it talking about it.
I have. I think I'll knock it back half an hour as well, so I could really see her, that performance, that scene again, and really just pick it up, so I could actually understand what I'm talking about at the minute.
it sounds good that they haven't. It's not boring art house for 4 hours.
Straight drama. Nah, yeah. I wouldn't be here to do this podcast if it was.
Well, you wouldn't be able to finish it if it was like one of those Free Times movies or 2046, so, kind of thing.
Yeah. Man, I had to keep trying to watch that. But basically that has all I've been trying to watch. But I do have a couple new movies I've gotten hold of. The Shinjuku Incident, which looks quite good, and I'm looking forward to watching that. And of course I do have one or two other Japanese movies I need to catch up on.
Cool. The discussion this week, before the question, is the trailer and poster for Edmund Pang Ho Jung's Love in a Puff has just been revealed. A movie that comes out on the 25th of March in Hong Kong. Pang Ho Jung, of course, legend on Cost on Fire and legend in his own right, thanks to directing movies like Mensa in Black, Beyond Our Ken, Isabella, and Exodus, as well as AV. We're going to talk about each of them a little bit, actually. But Love in a Puff, reading this off Far East Films, who posted this news. It stars Sean Yu and Miriam Jung as two unlikely lovers who are drawn together by their addiction to cigarettes. And I'm actually not going to say anything else, because you, as I've always said about Edmund Pang's movies, it's those kind of minor plot summaries that just, you know, because it sounds like a cheesy rom-com, but in his hands, he does really unexpected stuff. I watched this trailer, and you know, they meet around this big, because you can't smoke indoors obviously now, and they have to go outside, and every office worker meets around this big ashtray in an alley, and they have the little group there, the little they socialize there. They call themselves the Hot Pot Pack, as they gather around this trash bin with an ashtray. And here these two characters meet, Sean Yu's character and Miriam Jung's character. And when you watch the trailer, which has no subtitles, it's set often to this South American flavor music that Edmund Pang clearly loves. Because you have that music, type of music, in the likes of Beyond Our Ken and Isabella. And they sort of meet and they touch each other's heart, I guess. But it's just... There's something, Edmund Pang has something different going on, some more intelligence going on, obviously, but there's something askew, something unexpected with his intentions for a film. And even if you watch a movie, and this leads into us summarizing each movie a little bit. So even when you watch a movie, you see what it's about, but ultimately Edmund Pang has other thoughts going on. Other personal thoughts being injected in his movie. So running through them a little bit, his debut, You Shoot, I Shoot, it's a less complex of his movies in a way, but it's obviously about this hitman who hires a director to shoot his assassinations. Mm-hmm. And they gain fame by doing that. And it deals also with you know, the poor economy of Hong Kong at the same time. But when you move into Men Suddenly in Black, his second movie, you watch that. It's, you know, the men cheating on their wives, set structured like a Michael Bay movie almost.
Yeah, I was thinking it was almost like a Mission Impossible type setting.
Yeah, like exactly.
The amount of planning that's went into it.
And the different mission objectives that they write out on screen. And then you read the director's statement. And what he personally, Edmund Pang Ho Jung, is thinking about, he's looking back at a time, an era in Hong Kong, a club era even, that he never got to experience. And it's a lost era that he's sad that it's lost. And it's not like he wanted to cheat just like the others did, but there's a sad view coming from him about lost things in Hong Kong. And you know, he doesn't impose this on his movies very much, because it's a very funny movie, Men Suddenly in Black. It's a very, very funny movie, wacky movie. And Beyond Our Ken, obviously, it has, I don't remember the director's statement, but it's one of his most, one of his most darkest films.
Mm-hmm. Easily, you know, my favorite.
Yeah. Men, you know, the evil of men and women, you know. Mm-hmm. Shame that movie, though, is, you know, it kind of echoes real life a little bit with the sex photos and stuff like that. Gillian Chung stars in this, and unfortunately she was part of a sex photo scandal in real life, and it's very much unfortunate. It doesn't ruin Beyond Our Ken.
No, but it's always probably going to be the first thing that comes to your mind when that part of the storyline comes up. Or it's gonna be the first thing you mention that you're watching the movie with.
Yeah, nowadays, yeah, it was, you know, it's a few years in between that between that movie and that scandal,
Yes,
but
yes.
it's really unfortunate. But she's excellent in that film,
Nah.
and the music and stuff like that. And it's really a pretentious movie when you look at it. But he's a bit more clever than to make, you know, movies that abstract movies. You know what I mean? I don't remember again the director's statement for that one, but AV, you know. Horny young men faking a porn production just so they can all have sex with this Japanese AV actress. And then behind all that is, you know, a statement about, you know, how youths feel lost compared to their parents that protested and stood for things in like the 60s and 70s. You know, so. I won't go through Isabella and Exodus, but Trivial Matters, moving on to his short film collection, which, you know, after Isabella, you know, this very kind of dark movie, deals with incest, a very arty movie. Then he moved on to a short film collection where, you know, you of course remember the Edison Chen short and the Ethan Chan short.
Yes.
Can it get more naughtier? Do you still remember the Edison Chen short? What was it
The
essentially
Ghost
was about?
Festival.
No,
I think it was in
no,
Ireland, no,
no, the Edison.
when he was chatting the lassie up in the club.
Yeah.
And basically thinking he is like Spider-Man, but he's just cleaning out toilets.
He's pissing on shit stains in toilets. And the Ethan Chan one, obviously, where, you know. But oral sex, a lot about oral sex.
I'm also quite a fan of the one, I think it is the last one, when it's Sean Yu and Conroy Chan,
Yeah.
and it's basically one's an assassin, the other one's the target, but then they end up smoking a joint at the back of a bowling alley together.
It's very silly, but you know what? You know what his statement basically was about that. This one, there was actually two on the DVD, sort of. But the one he focused on is, as let's see, I pulled up my review. The director's statement on the DVD. Pang said he sees trouble in his beloved local cinema, because short storytelling on YouTube has kind of taken over. People don't have the patience anymore to sort of experience a large movie. So it was kind of based on that. It's not somber. He doesn't impose it on his movies. And then when you jump to like Love in a Puff, I'm sure there's a he has a deep thought beyond what looks like kind of a rom-com, but an atmospheric one. That might be have its dramatic and somber sections, you know, because there's not a wacky feel to this trailer. Far from it. The first scene, though, is kind of fun without subtitles. Basically, it looks like Sean Yu and Miriam are in the convenience store buying cigarettes together. So they, you know, they shows their brands carefully or something like that. It seems like an elaborate scene. You know, there's more dialogue than just "Can I have a pack off? Can I have a pack off?" Did you watch the whole trailer despite not having subtitles? What do you think of it in short? Well, for long, you can go for long as well. Sorry.
No. Well, as you can tell, it's got the unique story which you expect from Pang Ho Chung. Sean Yu's another actor I could rely on, and Miriam Young, I've not watched much of her stuff, but it looks like she could put in a good performance.
She is the rom-com girl, but
Yeah, yeah.
she's been given a chance. Of course, she starred in
Drunk, drunk,
Dumplings,
drunk. Of
drunk, drunk,
course.
drunk, but Dumplings for Fruit Chan, which she also really good.
Yep. But yeah, it looks good. And like what you said about the scene where they're choosing their own cigarettes, I think it was like they're almost boasting, well, in the fact they're boasting the benefits of each He's like, right, I'll take the green pack because this, this, and this. And she said, well, no. He's like, for me, it's easily the red packet because these men. But.
But it's not a movie that you should do. I kind of got this feeling like no way is he centering this around cigarettes with teen idols and photo models and stars in general appearing in it. But he, I guess he has a freedom in a way to not adhere to mainstream sensibilities as such. Having said that, Drink Drunk Drunk is obviously a movie about drinking a lot of beer, but it's more that was more of a, you know, very much a sponsored movie, you know, and a light and wacky movie that didn't. They could do that without fear of, you know, wonder what we're imposing on the youths of Hong Kong.
But I like the look of it. There is the expected usual faces. I think we had Chung Tat Ming. He can just pass him by in a one shot, but obviously he'll have a bigger role in the movie. And at the very end of the trailer, who makes an appearance?
I don't remember.
Vincent Kok.
Oh, yeah, that brilliant bit. Which I won't spoil for anyone, but watch the end of the trailer indeed.
Aye, because they're saying this movie is set around 1997,
Oh,
when
really?
this, not 1997, 2007, when I think the ban about smoking in buildings first came into place.
Yeah, and public places in general, of course.
Yes.
Vincent, of course, produced. At least they produced Edmund Pang's very first movie, You Shoot, I Shoot. He's in it as well. He plays a VCD salesman and also sells the video equipment to Eric Kott's character. So he runs between his stores, selling the porn VCDs. Obviously, he's not selling regular movies. He's selling porn VCDs. And I like Vincent. He's kind of this cameo guy that can make his cameo presence work. He's possibly a very annoying man, but I prefer him over the likes of, you know, Eric Tsang, who can appear in a lot of stuff as well as being a producer of film. But I like Vincent. He's... But love in a puff. I don't know what to expect, and I love that fact. Despite having watched the trailer, I don't know what to expect, but so am looking forward to it. And you know what? He's got another movie out soon. It's a slasher movie. It's a gory slasher movie.
With a misleading title, if you
Yeah.
because I didn't know that.
It's a movie called Dream Home, starring
There goes the
Josie
fucking
Ho.
rom-com I was thinking of.
Yep, it's. It's there's only a teaser poster out now, but he's apparently just according to Josie Ho anyway, gone all, you know, all out with gore.
Good
But
Lord.
you know, I'm very certain that he's still walking his own path and therefore is not thinking of living up to any expectations. And therefore that gore movie might be, you know, after you've watched it, even if it's a, you know, splatter movie, you might not even remember the gore because he's focused on another subject, sort of, you know. There's no true expectation for Pang, and I love that fact. He might do a mainstream big CGI movie someday, but right now I think he's an exciting engine for Hong Kong cinema, and he's getting play outside of Hong Kong, getting to be a festival favorite. Isabella won an award in Berlin for best score, I believe, the Peter Kam score. And so I'm glad to have been a part of this carousel kind of from the beginning. I think I saw You Shoot, I Shoot the year after it came out, which was the year before Men Suddenly in Black, so 2002.
And I was picked up from Men Suddenly in Black. I'd read the plot, loved the plot, saw the trailer, and eagerly awaited the DVD. And then it was from then on followed each film.
And that was a successful film as well. It did really well at the box office. So since then, he's made very, you know, even Exodus is not the very mainstream film. AV was not a very mainstream film, or Isabella, or Trivial Matters. So he's walking his own path, and I'm such a great fan of his. And even like looking at the poster for Love in a Puff, the Miriam Yeung has it's a big heart on her, kind of a cut out heart from somewhere, and in front of Sean Yu's mouth is a small heart and a pen sticking out of the mouth. A pen, not a cigarette, a pen, pencil. So what the hell. So, and even you can even do a poster image like that, and they can, you know, put it all over, you know, the subways and advertise the movie like that, and no one is like, no investor is walking around, you know, very worryingly, you know, hoping we must crack the $10 million, you know, mark. We must beat a big movie like, you know, if the Warlords had come out at that time, we must beat a big movie like that. But it seems like there's no pressure on Peg to do that. And I'm glad, as long as he can walk his own path and be his quirky self. And each movie is not exactly the same either. It's no, he's not going on repeat. It's not like, you can argue that Johnny Toe goes on repeat, but he's really good when doing yet another cool gangster movie. Mm-hmm. But there's lots to look forward to.
All right. Next up, we have a question from David the Angry Ranger Lamb,
which is the same as David Dr. Mac Lamb from prior show.
A man of many aliases. I've noticed that Eakin has been popping up in some rather high profile movies as of late. Do you think we can officially say that Eakin Cheng is back? If so, does this mean more Young and Dangerous type stuff, or do you think he's going to take on some more challenging movies?
So, scholar Stuart Sutherland, Eakin Cheng scholar.
Mm-hmm.
But by the way, you must absolutely protest part of that question. Do you think we can officially say that Eakin Cheng is back? He never fucking went away.
Well,
in all honesty,
I'm just, see, I really don't think I have an opinion. I'm just more or less just like, let him do what he want, and I'll follow him either way.
Yeah, it's like, that's being a fan.
I'm not. Well, as if he does a Young and Dangerous film, that'll pique my interest, because that was the films that got me interested. That reveals him as a star to me. So if he does one of those movies, that'll be cool. It might not touch back on him back then. Sure, obviously this was. Well, obviously he's more of an experienced actor now, because from 1996, well, that's been 14 years, so he's not going to look so good in that leather jacket. But
I wonder, it's bound to turn up in a parody of some sort if Hong Kong ever had a penchant for doing Young and Dangerous parody, when he puts on the jacket or puts on the sweet tight pants that he had in Young and Dangerous and tries to put them on, and
he's got the dragon tattoo across his chest, but now it's kind of sagged into a man boob, and the dragon's no longer looking angry. It kind of looks dull. Mm-hmm. His claws are all bent. Jordan Chan's character is famous for multicolored hair. Now he doesn't have any. But aye, it'd be cool if they'd done that. But I don't see a Young and Dangerous being revived. Of course, I'm saying that, and the Storm Riders, Storm Warrior movies have just came out. I think it done well.
Probably in the mainland, at least.
So, anything could be on the cards, because it wasn't until like a few years ago that we were told there's going to be another Storm Warriors movie, another Storm Riders movie. Andrew Lau was supposed to have been ready for one, but I think that project just basically stopped with the fact that the Pang brothers, Oxide and Danny Pang, which are no relation to Pang Ho Chung.
Nope.
I think they already had a script ready, so I think they took the lead. But he's back, kind of. I have to admit, some of his last films weren't that interesting, like Heavenly Mission, easily forgettable movie.
Forest of Death.
Yeah, I would have loved to have liked Fuck, why am I saying all this? I would have loved... I wanted to like Forest of Death, but it just didn't happen.
Mm.
I watched it, right? Scientist with a good haircut. I didn't say that. I'm going to have to cut that out because that just spoiled the end.
Okay.
Well, no, it's basically aliens in the end. It's not the forest.
Yeah, you've already spoiled it on a prior podcast.
Ah, fuck. I haven't I?
No one wants that movie, apparently, anyway. So.
Yeah. It's just... Oh, I wish that would have been a good film.
Mm.
But that's... I'm not even going to cut this now. That's the thing that worried me about Storm Warriors is because... it was one of the Pang brothers had done this movie, and for the
past...
That'll
be Danny, I believe.
Mm-hmm, Danny, and I watched Recycled, and I hated Recycled. It looked visually great, but
Recycled.
Aye. Just the second there's like the tunnel of dead unborn babies is like the thing I detest most in this world is anything to do with like just dead children, unborn, it makes me really uncomfortable, and I could easily make a movie going from like a 7 out of 10 to a minus 50.
Wow.
It's just, I reckon,
yeah. So, I've yet to see that, but I am going to see it because,
It is just disturbing. It really just pushed
I like to push my limits, give it an honest chance, but I'm not gonna like the best scene and the one that I think inspires, you know, humans to do these kind of things is that very scene Stu talked about. I'm not gonna go that route.
But
my Dream Girl probably wasn't a good movie either. But you know, you can bash part of his career because for a few number of years, I haven't seen the Young and Dangerous movies, I should say, but for a number of years, I didn't think he was a very exciting presence. He was, you know, I knew he was, but who cares about him? Mm-hmm. He didn't do anything for me. Feel 100% is a fucking terrible movie, and he's annoying in it, and it's really, you know, that's supposed to say something about young people in Hong Kong and their love troubles, blah 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 blah. Go ahead and watch Love Is Not a Game But a Joke instead. It came out the year after. That's a way better movie.
Mm. Or do what I done and watch the sequel first?
Feel 100% once more.
Mm-hmm. I it was so strange because I'd won the movie on an auction, on eBay, for like just a couple quid. And I thought, oh, cool, fine. Watched it, realized, yep, this is a sequel. Went back on eBay and then bought the original, like the first movie, Feel 100%, from the same seller a week later. And he contacted me and said, I guess you noticed you bought the sequel. I was like, yep.
Yeah. Apparently he has different names in the two movies according to Hong Kong Movie Database. Yeah. Jerry in the first and Marco in the second.
Mm-hmm. And
I don't know what that is. I
have to say, I actually did kind of enjoy the sequel. And for one good reason. Ching Mai.
Okay, don't get
easily a good highlight to the film.
Okay.
That's a plus 10 in my books.
If I find like a $10 Laserdisc of it or a cheap VCD of it, I will happily go after it just because, you know, I can easily. I suffered through I'm Your Birthday Cake. And Ching Mai wasn't even very good in that, despite having that long 20-minute striptease at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Not nude striptease. But anyway, going back to...
I think half our audience just cancelled their order. Striptease?
Nope. No. Well, it has Michael Wong doing a lot of... Yeah. Gay Michael Wong. And I enjoy that a lot more than Ching Miao in that film.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like Michael. But in regards to David's question, I think... As I've said a lot of times, Ekin's most enjoyable type of presence for me is nowadays, during the last few years, because it has a lot to do with experience, a little bit to do with age, because he's grown into his face a little bit more, you know, and he's not stuck with that haircut always.
Yeah.
Movies, you know, and Rule Number One is obviously probably the prime example of him growing into a movie because he obviously gained weight for it. And it's rule number one is this, you know, mixture of a lot of quirky things and a lot of scary things. And he's good in it. And Storm Warriors is obviously not aimed to be high art or anything. You know, that's not the same. And Claustrophobia, I haven't seen yet.
I'm not even sure if that even has a DVD yet.
No, I think it's somehow delayed for some reason. Maybe it's having trouble finding DVD distribution in Hong Kong. But out of all things, there's a great example of a movie. If it had been made 10 years earlier with another co-star, I think there was would just be the most boring shit you've ever seen that year. But It Had to Be You, made in 2005, is really good.
It is.
He's older. He plays well against Carina Lam. Obviously, they're not very close in age, but it's the kind of movie where if you have a short presence in a leading man and leading lady, you'll get a lot of mileage out of it. And I think it's a very, very good movie for that genre, romantic comedy, a bit of drama. And so I think you're very right that his streak is kind of uneven during the last few years. But I think Al shall look forward to his performances a lot more compared to 14 years ago.
Yeah.
You know. But I'm quite curious, though, because when we watch Young and Dangerous, when we do a commentary eventually, which we will, I have no... I could have preconceived notions about that film and be like Chang and Hair and stupid triad. But you know what? I won't go into them in that regard because they might present, you know, an entertaining gangster saga despite, you know, triad movies in a row.
Yeah.
It's not the most exciting film because you come to recognize triad movies of the late 90s and they kind of feel the same. But I'll, you know, that might surprise me. And I'll certainly watch the first three in a way. I have the box set that you gave me, bought me the first three movies. But it's Ek and Cheng of the late 90s, not that appealing to me. Actually, not at all. The movies I've seen. But Ek and of the between 2006 and 2010, and the ongoing, you know, Ecking.
Yeah.
I think he has stuff to bring.
Because his career has completely changed, like, in the past 10 years, because looking it up now, in the year 2000, he starred in 7 movies.
Yeah.
Okay, right, one of them was a cameo, but for the past few years, he only done one film in 2007, one film in 2008, he's done 2 for 2009.
Yep.
It's like he's taken a step back, and he could just be choosing his roles more carefully.
Yeah.
Or, well, you could easily say maybe there's a lack of interest for him, but
I think that's all something it's a benefit for him, I think, in terms of his reputation. He's probably and hopefully financially secure, so he doesn't need to rely on being exposed in movies as he was, and in doing music at an extreme rate. Then again, I don't know if his singing career is still, you know, as productive as it once was, or anything like that. But
and I do have to thank co-host Jim, tons of fun. For I think it was either last Christmas or my last birthday, I did receive an Ek and Cheng in concert karaoke DVD.
I think, was that the one that Mike bought that Jordan Chan was in as well?
Oh, crap.
That was a different one. I think Mike showed me it, and it was a con.
I think they had planned something together.
Right, or they? But yeah, I remember that, like 2 Christmases ago.
Yes. And they sang all the classics. Didn't understand any of them, but
you were humming along in
like,
sort of broken
it's
Chinese.
The dangerous theme. Tinkerlock's on stage. He can't sing for a fuck.
It's there.
But yep. If anything, I think actually, well, for you, this your answer for this would be quite different for me when it actually comes to the first film that kind of brought our own attention towards Ikan Cheng. Because frankly, the first Ikan Cheng move that stood out for me was Twins Effect. I still have the very broken DVD. Every time I watch it, it's like the
very,
DVD.
The very broken?
Yes, okay. Every time I watch it, it seems to pause more. It seems to skip scenes. It seems to just jump. Every time I watch it, the DVD seems to get worse. It's like it's forcing me. It's like, come on, man. You've watched me too much now. Please, stop.
By the way, the very important question. Ekin or Dior?
Ugh. Well, come on.
Ekin or Dior? Straight from the heart. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Noodles.
Noodles, good choice.
I knew there was a secret answer in there.
Yeah, but you know, you have a very early movie of his that you haven't watched yet. I think there'll always be the winners movie that I the VHS that I transferred for you, and yeah. It's a very funny movie. He's not funny because he plays the gambling opponent, the straight faced gambling opponent with a parrot, but yeah, he has a parrot on his shoulders. It plays a very crucial part in the movie. And that movie is greatly fun because you had Tony Leung Chiu Wai and Tony Leung Ga Fai. And they're just fucking insane in that movie. They're just camping it up. And Ekin Cheng, he gets to do an IR moment towards the end. And he's perfectly all right in the film. He just has that straight-faced role, you know what I mean? The gambling opponent, and he has great hair. You know, 1994, great hair, 16 years ago and all. But that I hope you watch that soon because that is a greatly fun film. Just insane. A lot of physical abuse towards Leung Chiu Wai, especially. Lots of it. And remember that parrot. That's right. by the way, going down memory lane, do you remember what Ekin's main occupation? This is trivia time, bitch. Do you remember Ekin's hobby in the movie Why Wild Girls?
Oh man, wasn't it video games?
Yeah, indeed, like in Nintendo kind of thing. He was very much an adult man in a kid in an adult man's body.
Mm-hmm. And you pretty sure didn't he have like an older partner? Or the woman, well, no, she was like a businesswoman. I think his partner almost seemed older because he was more childlike. He was sitting at home playing video games.
Yeah, and she was like complaining, oh, gotta get a job, do something for yourself. While the neighbors, among others, Loletta Lee, hid in his shower and did all manner of shenanigans. It's a movie in sync sound, actually, so you get to hear Ekin's voice, an early example of his live voice. And he's in Boys Are Easy as well, and that insane movie. So, you know, it's not a bad filmography, but he's not always been... The interesting parts of certain movies, actually the least interesting part of certain movies back then. But I don't know which was the first one I saw, really. I think Return to a Better Tomorrow, actually, because I bought that VHS in the 90s, and just remember his face, sort of. They advertised it as starring, you know, he was Dior, you know, on the MIA VHS.
Right.
And it's a fairly competent triad action in its own right. I remember Lau Ching Wan was in it, Ching Wei Yao, wow. And Michael Wong, I think, Nai Singh as well, Colin Chow, I think.
He was the bad guy with bleached blonde hair.
Yeah, indeed.
And he could always easily play a vicious fucking bad guy.
Yeah, I think it was Sing Sound as well, that movie. So you get to hear like a lot. Yeah, good cast as well. I mean, look at this. Ben Lam, Nai Singh, James Wong, Michael Wong, Paul Chin Poi, Lee Siu Kei, Park Min Wong, and Lau Ching Wan, Ekin Cheng, Ching Miao. not the sequel to Better Tomorrow at all, but...
just sort of like they're all rehashed together with different people.
Yeah. But goodness own right. Again... It's a good filmography and uneven one, but the new movies, newest being Once a Gangster,
I know nothing about.
No, other than it's solely directed by Felix Chong. Felix Chong has been the co-writer of the Infernal Affairs series, the co-director alongside Alan Mack of Moonlight in Tokyo, Lady Cop, and Papa Crook. And Overheard, but now he's making his own movie, and quite looking forward to that. Mm-hmm.
I do like the literally title for it, which is Flying Sand Spinning in the Wind.
That's how Chinese works, you
Yep. AKA Young and Dangerous 8.
know. The next generation.
It does co-star Jordan Chan.
Yeah, I see that. Alex, which Alex Fong is that? Fong Chun Sun. I always forget that. Is that the young
It
one or the
sounds
old
like
one?
the young one. Once his
Damn it.
page loads up, we'll soon
Yeah.
find.
Nah,
No,
fuck, fuck no.
it's Jetpack
It's
Alex.
Jetpack for fuck's sake.
It's Angel
I don't
Fees.
remember his Chinese name because he is Jetpack. It's Alex Jetpack Fong, which leads us neatly to the plugin actually,
Yes.
because I have an Alex Jetpack Fong related plug. You shall all visit the following link. It's a blog called Bullets Over Chinatown, and it's a blog maintained by Jared King, a friend of mine on Facebook and fellow Category 3 exploitation sleaze bad Hong Kong movie lover. He loves these old films, and he has posts about, he can easily say a lot of Cat 3 movies are crap, but he loves highlighting them. So even movies like, which isn't Cat 3 by the way, The Mystery of the Big Boobs, he highlights that, puts up posters of I Love Maria. He takes photos of his VCD and VHS collection and that kind of stuff, especially old VHS collections. I love to watch that stuff because there's a lot of gems there that, for instance, are like subtitled only on the tape, so but never on the VCD and LaserDiscs or DVDs. There's a lot of cool stuff and a lot of cool pictures. And the latest post as of this date is a few pictures from Angel Free where the jetpack tag to Alex Fong comes from, and it's a classic movie, the best of the Angel movies, I would think, because I haven't seen two, but I doubt anything can top the jetpack with the machine guns built into it finale. That is classic. And it's a very good action film as well. Moon Lee is great in it. She has some very good fight scenes in it. Did you ever see Angel 3?
I have not.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to only hard to, it's hard to obtain, but also most of the versions out there are either full screen dubbed or full screen subtitled. You can't watch it. The subtitles aren't that cropped because it was one of those wide movies, but it's maintained and achieved a classic status despite being presented that way. And Jared's blog, he describes Hong Kong cinema in his About Me section. And his quote here, I hope it's his. If not, it's still genius. Hong Kong cinema is like sex and pizza. Even when it's bad, it's still pretty good. I can fairly agree on that. And he has a picture of Charlie Cho.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh well.
As you should do. Second plug for me is another podcast. It's called Kongcast. Podcast. You will see this link in the podcast post. It's actually done by someone connected to lovehqfilm.com, not Ross Chen himself. And the advantage of this one is that it covers Eastern and Western films, but current Eastern films, local films. So they have like reviews on air up of the 2010 Lunar New Year output, which includes True Legend, All's Well, Ends Well 2, 2010, and 72 Tenets of Prosperity, which is actually partly a Shaw Brothers production, as well as 14 Blades. So I listened to one of them. They're good, easygoing, not knowledgeable, and you get a perspective from someone actually located in Hong Kong. I believe one of them is, and another one is somewhere in America. Usually two people do this, I believe. So Kongcast.com. The link will be in the show post, but I highly recommend that for that very reason, reviewing new movies while they're in playing at cinemas, which is always a good thing. That's where they did the Confucius as well in an earlier podcast, the Chiang Fat
Right,
movie.
right.
And they're apparently nice and short sometimes also, 33 minutes. So some podcasts, so good on them. And that's my plugins.
All right. Let's see. For me, it's actually just going to be a couple of Twitter plugs. Obviously, I would love it if we have more people follow our Podcast on Fire Twitter. We currently have 68 followers. So, come on, let's get that over to 70. And maybe I might actually start giving away prizes when we start getting to bigger numbers. Like, say, I don't know, our 75th follower. I'll look out for our 75th follower. And
he or she gets what? A little red packet?
Oh, man.
Yeah. But you have to, therefore, be the 75th follower very quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that...
The Lunar New Year right is almost soon over.
Mm-hmm. And it'll give me enough time to dye an envelope red. But, yeah. So, of course, that one is twitter.com/podcastonfire. It is getting updated more frequently now because it is in sync with our Facebook page. So sometimes there's going to be posts from Ken. And I'm now catching up with technology by getting a hold of an iPhone. So I now will be annoying people whilst on the move, posting pictures and letting you know which video games I'm playing or what movies I'm complaining about. So
sole reason to own an iPhone, sir.
Mm-hmm, yep. And taking pictures of uncooked food. But yes, trust me, it's all on Podcast on Fire. Oh, twitter.com/podcastonfire. But
that should be in the iPhone advertising. Taking pictures of uncooked food. Get an iPhone. Mm-hmm. You could take pictures of uncooked food.
And, of course...
Be responsible if it's not cooked properly. Lawsuits!
Be more than happy to take pictures of the food regurgitated. Like, mission failed. Picture attached. But yeah, and another great person that you could follow is Jackie Chan. Jackie Chan is on Twitter now.
He actually is.
Mm-hmm. It is a verified account. So, of course, it could... I wouldn't be surprised if maybe it's like his assistant is maybe taking pictures for him, then upload them, because Jackie's never admitted to being a tech-savvy guy. Like,
well, I think that's pretty much is it, because they've named the name of their system like Veronica or something.
Right.
So that person is taking pictures or uploading the stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know how comfortable Jackie is writing in English either. So, mm-hmm.
So his account is, well, you can find that one at twitter.com/iofJackieChan.
Creative.
Mm-hmm. So, I've been your host for this evening. I'm Stuart Sutherland.
Cannibals on. Good night.
Yeah. I'd like to also send a quick thanks out to... Fucking music.